From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Floating format tonight, so next hour, Stephen Quayle joins us, hoping to shed some light on why so many microbiologists around this planet are dying. Why are birds dropping dead, falling out of the sky? Strange smells continue along the East Coast, in the oceans. What the heck is going on? Stephen Quayle joins us next hour. Some breaking news, of course. Reports of an explosion inside the U.S. Embassy in Athens, Greece. Police have blocked off streets. No reports of injuries. They do not know what may have caused the blast. We don't even know how big it is. We'll monitor that situation throughout the night for you. President Bush's plan to send more troops to Iraq ran into a wall of criticism on Capitol Hill as administration officials drew confrontational, sometimes mocking challenges, both from Democrats and Republicans. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said in a response that the administration might abandon the increase if the Iraqi government doesn't do its part, but he provided no timetable. Mr. Bush and top members of his national security team sought to rally support for the troop buildup a day after he unveiled his plan for turning around a conflict that has lasted now nearly 4 years, cost more than 3,000 American military lives and many Iraqi lives. An Afghan insurgent leader said in a television interview broadcast today that his fighters helped Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden escape intense U.S. bombing in the Tora Bora Mountains in 2001. The former Afghan prime minister, he was that for just a short while, and leader of a militant group, told Pakistan's private geo television network that the United States began its assault on the rugged Afghan mountains 5 years ago. Some of his fighters moved bin Laden and his deputy, Al-Zawahiri, and other associates to a safe place. He did not say where that safe place was. In Alabama, a man shot a friend in the stomach twice when the two got into an argument over James Brown's height. Now, James Brown, of course, as you know, died of heart failure on December 25th at the age of 73. His accounts of his height have varied. He was known to wear lifts in his shoes. So these two guys went at it. They got mad at each other, trying to argue over how tall James Brown was. The House voted to expand government-financed embryonic stem cell research, but for the second time in 2 years, lawmakers were unable to muster enough votes to overcome a promised presidential veto. Still, the vote was a high watermark in the stem cell debate, drawing advocates a little closer to the two-thirds vote threshold that they need to override President Bush's objections, because he says he will veto this. There are ghosts in the SeaTac Airport, Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. Ghosts, but not the kind you think. After repeated warnings from air traffic controllers, computer software will be improved by the end of the month to ease the problem of ghost radar images at SeaTac. Controllers have been complaining since November that they often redirect planes because of false targets on the airport's radar. In announcing plans for the fix, the Federal Aviation Administration agreed that better software was needed but denied that there was a safety issue. In Alaska, of course, there's an amateur astronomer up there who braved 40 degree below zero weather to get a look at a comet, Comet McNaught. It is as bright as anything you may have ever seen. The comet discovered last year by Australian astronomer R.H. McNaught is expected to remain visible in the northern hemisphere, conditions permitting, through Friday, when it's likely it will become obscured by the sun's glare. It's getting close, and after that, it will begin its traverse around the sun, eventually emerging for people in the southern hemisphere to enjoy. Why did we just find out about this comet? And what does it all mean? Well, in a moment, we're going to turn to physics professor James McKinney for some answers on Coast to Coast AM. Well, he's Professor James McKinney. He's a physicist. He spent decades promoting his theoretical work, showing that the solar system is ever-changing, electrically active. These theories have been confirmed with space probe data. We turn to Professor James when we need to talk about space issues and other issues as well. His website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Hey, James, welcome back.
George, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How did this comet, this very bright comet, sneak in on us?
This is the most amazing aspect of this comet. It sat up just to the right of Jupiter all summer long. It was discovered August 7th, 2006. But it sat up literally in the ecliptic, in the plane of the planets, in clear view of every amateur astronomer, and nobody saw it. We didn't have any professional astronomers see it until August 7th when McNaught saw it. But this sat in the clear evening night sky since March.
That's amazing. And James, this is the brightest comet in 30 years, and we just find out about it. I mean, that tells you there's so many other things in this universe that we don't know about, and that's pretty dangerous, James.
Absolutely, and it's a new comet. This surprised me when I first looked at it, and now it has actually come into view in the SOHO C3 camera. I've got the first small thumbnail picture up on my webpage, but it is huge. It is gigantic. There's a picture of the sun in the center and then little Mercury down there. And this dwarfs any planet that we've seen or any comet. And remember NEAT and, all of those huge comets that came by the sun. This one is going to dwarf all of them put together.
Okay, you know, the theory continues. Of course, comets are made of a collection of all kinds of things, ice, gas, dust, and some of your theories too, James, huh?
Well, they... comets are not dirty snowballs, and you've heard me say that a few times. But I think we may see this comet really interact with the sun. And, of course, predictions are hard to make. Anytime in science, sometimes people have made predictions and they totally fizzle. But this one is bearing down on the sun and days away. I believe the closest approach is on the 12th, which is today. Where I am, soon to be today where you are.
Right.
And the 13th, even more important than the perihelion, I believe, is when it crosses the ecliptic plane. That's when I believe the major discharges may occur. Additionally, the sun has a very bright spot on the western limb that's coming around, so we might see some real fireworks here.
Well, now, when they say this is the brightest comet in 30 years, what makes it the brightest comet in 30 years, James?
Well, just looking at it, when it's very difficult to see, and a lot of amateurs and a lot of people who've tried to go out and look at this comet have been disappointed because it's very close to the horizon. Most of the good viewing has been in the northern latitudes around Nova Scotia or northern Canada,
right,
or Norway.
And a couple days ago, right?
Right, and a couple days ago. So there wasn't enough time for the average person. Plus, there's right now, due to the amount of heat on the planet Earth, most of the planet is covered with a vapor, a water vapor. So we've got clouds everywhere. So that makes it difficult also. But if you look just with good equipment at this comet, it is the brightest comet, more so than Hale-Bopp, than Hyakutake, than Kohoutek. We had a comet, was that in the 70s? I forget when Kohoutek was. I've got it on a list here. I remember when it came by, and it interacted greatly with the sun. The Skylab scientists took many pictures of that discharge between Kohoutek and the sun. And we've seen that with other comets when Comet NEAT came by and there was that tremendous explosion that came out of the sun. And this one is heading in, so stay tuned.
Okay, now when you say stay tuned, James, I mean, what are the possibilities here?
Well, I believe that this one it's only going to be 15 million miles away from the sun, about 15.6 million miles. That's very close. That's half the distance from Mercury to the sun. That's only 60 times the distance from Earth to our moon. And this is coming by, and I should make it clear, this comet is not coming near Earth. I'm using that as a comparison.
Sure.
But the comet will be very close to the sun. This is, as close to grazing as you can get without actually grazing the sun. And in looking at the picture, the sun is if the sun were an inch on the picture, on the SOHO C3 camera picture, now that this comet is coming into view, if the sun were an inch high, the comet is about 3 inches high, or in diameter on this picture. So this is huge.
How big is a comet like this, including the tail?
Well, it's very difficult to estimate the comet nucleus size. Most astronomers claim that these are, 7 to 10 miles across, but I totally reject that idea. And I believe that these big comets have very large nuclei, possibly moon size or possibly even planet size. And I almost find it hard to believe that this thing could sneak in on us with all the automated search systems out there, telescopes working at near asteroid, Earth asteroid tracking, etc., that this thing really snuck in. And I think somebody really did see it earlier.
Why didn't they see anything about it?
I don't know. And if it did sneak up on the professionals in the military who have the good equipment, then you have to ask one of two questions. If it snuck in on them, and truly, then what's wrong with this picture? And if it did not sneak in, if they did know about it and didn't say it, you ask an equally difficult question.
Give us a little astronomy course here, James. The difference between a comet and an asteroid.
Well, an asteroid typically is in a more circular orbit. There's a very nebular crossover between asteroids and comets. In the standard theory with snowballs, they just say the asteroids don't have any snow on them. But once we've looked at comet nuclei, real comet nuclei, they are rocky and dry and hot too. But in my world, in my theoretical world, the asteroids simply are not in elliptical orbits and therefore do not form the tails. They don't discharge the solar capacitor. The typical big comet is one that comes in like this comet on an elliptical orbit, discharges the solar capacitor, forms that big cometary tail, which is being drawn in by electrical forces.
Last time we talked with you, James, we were talking about Sunspot 930, and man, we got lucky on that one because it sent out a huge X-flare that, thank God, wasn't pointed directly at the planet, or we would have had one heck of a mess here, wouldn't we?
Right, and what's interesting is at that time, and I was on the show, we were talking about it, and I said, there must be something out by Jupiter. Guess what?
I remember that.
And I said, there's got to be something out there. And I even said, I wonder if there's a comet that somebody doesn't know about out there. Well, here we are. That's where this was. It was on a direct path in from the region where Jupiter is, just a bit to the right.
You are a backer of Emmanuel Velikovsky's theory that Venus is a captured comet, correct?
Correct, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that theory. It's fascinating.
Well, the ancients talk about this, and of course, Velikovsky was not an astronomer, never pretended to be, and never wanted to interact with astronomers the way it turned out, but he was studying calendars, and he was looking for events to try and build a timeline on ancient calendars. He was studying archaeology and ancient calendars, and out of his studies, he realized that every ancient civilization around the world was talking about the same thing, that this broom cloud and all the various names were related to the planet Venus. In other words, Venus at one time was something very different than that bright spot we see up in the sky. And of course, this didn't make any sense to astronomers, so they were very outraged. And in spite of that, Velikovsky's books sold all over the world. They were some of the best-selling books of all time. And what I did, now, when I developed my theoretical work, I didn't even know who Velikovsky was. That actually came later. But unknowingly, when I was at Cornell, I developed the theoretical work based on space science data that comets were not dirty snowballs, and that, in fact, the larger comets would build up matter and could become captured as planets and moons, etc., and that's how the solar system formed. So Velikovsky really didn't have a theoretical basis at the time. So he was kind of out in the middle in a shooting gallery with scientists from every possible field attacking him, but primarily because the astronomers said this could not happen. And what I realized then and now is that this is the way the solar system works. These comets come in, and let's take an example here, especially with Comet McNaught.
Okay.
If Jupiter would have been about a year or maybe a year and a half earlier in its orbit, this comet would have had a major gravitational interaction with Jupiter, and this big comet might now be a member of our solar system, the inner solar system.
That's just what we want, right?
That's not what we need.
No, we don't want neighbors like that.
No, no, but that is just the shooting gallery that we live in out here. But that is a very real situation. This comet came right over Jupiter's orbit, and literally, once again, we missed a dodged a bullet in a sense, just like with Comet Hale-Bopp, that huge comet back in the 90s. If we would have been on Earth, if we would have been 3 months earlier in our orbit, we would have had a gravitational interaction with that comet, and it could have been captured and brought in as a moon or flung into the solar system where it would eventually interact with other planets. So capture is the way of the solar system. And this is Comet McNaught is a perfect example of that.
Jim, I have the strangest feeling. You know, people have emailed me saying, okay, come on, what are your predictions for this year? And, you know, I've kind of like sidestepped them, but I'm going to say this one. I have the weirdest intuitive feeling that in a couple months, we're going to get hit by some kind of an object. And I'm not saying this is going to be a 6-mile asteroid or anything like that, but I have a feeling this planet's going to get hit with something that will create some pretty widespread news coverage. And I don't know why I feel this way, but I just have this weird feeling.
Well, you deal with this material all the time. And so, you know, when you say that you have this feeling, I think it's based on not just, you know, a dream or something else. It's because you're very tuned to all of this. So predictions are difficult, but we'll revisit that and see
if I'm right.
If you're right, and because there's a lot of stuff flying around out there, and it's not going slow. That's one thing you have to understand about. Let's just take something in orbit. There was a piece of a Russian rocket that came in over Denver a week ago and made quite a light show. And that was coming in at, say, 17,000 miles an hour from an Earth orbit. But take something that's coming in 10 or 20 times that speed, and it might be quite a bit bigger than a rocket. You're dealing with a tremendous amount of energy, and if that hits something, it's going to cause damage.
Hey, James, based on the projected trajectory of Comet McNaught, when was the last time it came around? What do you think?
That is difficult to say, and it is the first time in any type of history that this comet has been recorded. It's a new comet, and it's one of the very difficult areas of study is trying to build a true orbit. A lot of these comet orbits are open-ended. In other words, they really don't have an endpoint out there or a far end of this orbit. And I haven't seen, they may have more data by now, but I haven't seen a real good estimate of the outer rim of this comet's orbit.
So, what's new on the Jay McCanney Science website?
Well, I've got the first picture from this, and I would refer people to go to the SOHO site, just do a Google search, type in S-O-H-O. What I'm working on now is the release of my next book, and I've talked about this. It's just a couple weeks away, and as with all my books, it's going to take an entirely new direction.
Well, you know, you've got an audience here, James, when you're ready to go, okay?
Yeah, we'll keep in touch there because it's getting down to that point.
Okay, thanks. That's Professor James McCanney reacting to the Comet McNaught. This thing is brighter than bright. Brightest thing in 30 years. It's pretty cool, isn't it? Open lines for the rest of this hour. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. 825-5033. The first-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And here's a wild card line. Ready to roll at 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Indeed. Well, some of you noticed on the coasttocoastam.com guest list that we had Waleed Shubat scheduled for today. He was on with us several months ago, and lots going on with these strange stories of birds and smells in the ocean and things like that. We'll reschedule Waleed for a future date, but I wanted to get into this with Stephen Quayle, who will join us at the top of the hour. If you haven't picked up the After Dark newsletter, well, listen to this. You can start with the January predictions issue. It's great. It's got all kinds of things in there, psychics doing their thing. We'll also give you two old shows that Art Bell did with the late Father Malachi Martin called Perfect Possession, Exorcisms. We found one of the shows. I mean, how we found it, I do not know, but they dug it up. It's a classic. You get those, you just pay shipping and handling. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Go online, coasttocoastam.com. Now, this is the open line portion of the program, so let us go straight to the phones. I do want to update you. No one apparently injured in the explosion at the U.S. Embassy in Athens, Greece. And the Greek police believe that the blast was possibly an act of terrorism. So, again, I'll continue to monitor that situation throughout the night for you. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Yeah. This is Lee from Nashville.
Hey, Lee. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm just hearing about this comet thing, and it's really amazing.
I mean, how it blows through, and nobody really spotted the thing until the last moment.
Somebody's sleeping at their post or something.
Well, you know what scares me? Not the comet situation, but the possibilities of these asteroids that creep up on us that aren't as noticeable as a comet is.
Well, we are in a shooting gallery.
Yeah, absolutely.
But how long will it be visible?
It starts to really diminish after tomorrow, and then as it makes its turn around the sun, people in the southern hemisphere, we're in the northern, people in the southern hemisphere will get a better shot at it.
And I wanted to ask one more question.
Sure.
About the bird flu. Is this just another hype thing, or is it for real?
Well, now don't confuse what's happening to these birds that are dropping out of the skies right now. Nobody really knows what's happening to them, and I don't think they are part of this bird flu. The bird flu, I think, what they call the pandemic bird flu, the avian bird flu, I think that's primarily hype.
Yeah, that's what I feel like too. I feel like they're just coming up with new ways to scare us. And you know, it was like that other thing that they were making a big deal about. What was it called? That other...
SARS?
Yeah, SARS.
Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah. And
West Nile virus is, of course, always out there.
Unless something really serious really is going on, they really shouldn't be making a big thing out of it.
Well, I'd like to scare people. That's what they do. You keep people on edge. I mean, that's the name of the game.
It's sick.
Yeah, it is. Hey, thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks, George.
Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
This is Todd. I'm driving eastbound on I-80 through Iowa.
Well, drive carefully, and what's on your mind, Todd?
I was wondering what the difference was between a comet and an asteroid.
Well, as I asked Mr. McKinney, who will give a better answer than I did, an asteroid, of course, is... A chunk of rock that is not made up primarily, as most people say, ice balls. Now, James McKinney doesn't believe comets are pure ice balls as well. But the big difference, of course, is that comets have particles that stream, which look like the tail, because they reflect light. They tend to melt. The asteroids are more hardened rock. Some of it made out of iron, and those are the dangerous ones, by the way. The rock asteroids generally will break up when they hit the atmosphere, regardless of how big they are. I mean, it's much safer. if you're going to get hit by a rock asteroid, not one made out of iron, because then you have one heck of a mess. Let's go next to our West of the Rockies line. First time caller line, by the way, is open. West of the Rockies line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. It's Keith, Skagway, Alaska.
Hey, Keith.
How are you?
Good.
You know, you were predicting something may hit this planet. I think you're very correct. I think we're very close to the apocalypse.
You do?
Yes. You know, each year at New Year's, I notice a level of wickedness in this world that just keeps getting worse and worse, like we're on a graph.
And yeah. If it was a profit margin for a company, they'd be making a lot of money.
Yes, they would.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It just keeps going straight up.
And I don't know where people's thoughts are. I think people should just keep thinking shalom in their head, you know? Shalom. That's God's word for peace, grace, and peace. If we keep thinking that in our minds, maybe we could all change, you know, and maybe possibly change this world.
Do you really believe good can beat evil?
Yes, I do. I believe good will win in the end.
Good for you.
We're gonna go through a lot of tribulation. And we're going to go through this little bit of tribulation here, and then we're going right into apocalypse. And it is going to get real interesting, especially with Bush sending 20,000 soldiers over to Iraq.
Yeah, they're not there yet.
Oh.
They're not there yet, so let's see what happens. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Craig from Aberdeen, South Dakota.
Hello, Craig. What gets you to call the show tonight?
Well, I was just wanting to tell you that I have Tom Biscardi in a cage, and I'm selling memberships to watch him on a webcam.
I won't take you up on that.
And I also, sir, wanted to thank you for mentioning my email to you on the air a couple, 3 weeks ago. You were talking with a woman guest. I can't remember her name for the life of me right now. But I'm the one who had sent you that fast blast about my ex.
A little more. Tell me a little more.
Well, she's a big fan of the show, and I was really depressed at the time, and I was wanting to have you possibly help me.
Oh, okay. I remember that. Now I remember that. You okay now?
I'm doing better. I'm working a second job. I'm getting back into school. Grades weren't exactly the best that I wanted to have them last semester, but I'm forging ahead.
That's the only way you can go.
But I just wanted to thank you for that, sir.
Okay, you're welcome. He sent me an email, and I gave him some brotherly advice, and he took it to heart, and that's good. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Lynn.
Hi, Lynn. Where are you calling from?
Santa Cruz, California.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a theory about 2012.
And what is yours?
Well, the tsunami that struck...
Indonesia.
In December of 2003, was caused by a 9.0.
No, it wasn't 2003, was it?
December?
No, I think it was 4, 5, 04, yeah.
Okay.
December 2004.
Well, it was caused by a subsea earthquake that was a 9.0.
It was huge, yeah.
Yeah. Well, in the wake of the earthquake and the tsunami, the Earth's axis shifted.
There was a little wobble there.
Right, and so our tilt toward the sun is off by a little. And in addition to that, I think we gained like a second a year in our calendar.
We gained time, not a second a year. It may have been like 1/100th of a second.
Okay.
But we speeded up a bit.
Right. So if another event of that magnitude were to occur, or larger, if the Earth were to speed up or slow down just enough, then it would throw off all our calendars, and we wouldn't be able to continue to make time because the year wouldn't be a year, and again, we'd have to just keep start accommodating. And so, for instance, the Mayan calendar that's based on the astronomical rotation of the, you know, the sun and the position of the moon and so forth, that would all shift just enough so that our calendars don't work anymore.
You think they would change that much?
Well, it would have to be...
Nanoseconds of time. That probably wouldn't make any big difference, would it?
It would if it was a large enough event or a series of events or also a comet.
a big event.
Yeah, if it was a big enough event, and not, you know, I think a 9-point earthquake.
I'm just glad that this comet, the McNaught, is not called Comet Wormwood. Then we'd all have a problem. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
My name's Vern. I'm from Marion, Wisconsin, and I listen to you almost every night.
Well, Vern, thank you for doing that. We appreciate it.
Okay, I have a big concern, mainly because I got two sons over in the Middle East right now.
I understand.
And I don't think the second Navy task force going into the Gulf there is a good idea at all.
Let me ask you something, Vern. Of course, you know, your sons are soldiers, and, you know, I did my stint in the Navy, never saw combat, believe me, not a hero. You know, they're putting themselves in harm's way. How do you feel about the entire situation? You know, some people get very upset when people question why we're there. My point is, you know, it's healthy to question. Don't knock the troops.
I don't knock troops. I'm a combat veteran from Vietnam.
Right.
I'm seeing too much of what happened in Vietnam happening here. We're putting more and more in, and I think we're going to get less and less out. I'm not saying cut and run, but I think that maybe sending 20,000 more troops over there might help, but I think we also got to have a big, big, big get-out-of-the-way fast plan.
I mean, do you remember when we went into Iraq and we faced virtually no resistance? It was amazing. The Iraqi soldiers, and they had a lot of them, simply took off their uniforms, put their old clothes on, and either took their guns or put them down, and they head for the hills. See, I think those are a lot of the people that they call the insurgents. I think they're the old soldiers.
Well, one of the big mistakes we did was break up the army. When we first went in there, and that instead of breaking up the army, I think we should have consolidated it into the new government. And then I think we'd have like half of the insurgents working.
Absolutely. And paid them and, you know, quickly, you know, gave them an opportunity. The problem in Iraq is that those people there don't have an upside right now.
Definitely they don't.
When do the sons come back?
I don't know. My one son is from my first wife. He's an Australian, and he's actually out on Garcia del Vega right now. And my other son is in the Green Zone in Baghdad, and he works there. I can't really tell you what he does, but he works inside the Green Zone. And I get maybe two emails every 3 months from them, and supposedly, and I do say supposedly, if they haven't extended them, he's supposed to be getting out last month.
Well,
but he hasn't come home yet.
Couldn't come sooner, huh?
Couldn't come sooner. This is his second time there. He was there when the war first broke out.
Was the second time voluntary for him or mandatory?
He's regular Army. It was mandatory.
It was. Okay, great. All right, well, let's say a little prayer for him and get them back.
And thank you, and keep up the good work. Like I say, I listen to you every night.
Okay, Vern, appreciate it. Let's move next to West of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. Good evening.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'd like to ask you a question, ask your opinion, your comment on the possibility, or not the possibility, but which might be, actually be happening or occurring, that the U.S. Department of Defense, the U.S. DOD, would be conducting experiments on U.S. military personnel and placing them in grave danger by conducting brainstorming experiments on them.
Well, you know, after interviewing a number of people in, you know, the mind control field, we know that experiments have been done on Americans. I can't say for sure that it's being done on troops, for example, but I do think experiments continue someplace. How widespread, I don't know. Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh, hi, George.
Yes, it sure is.
Okay, Doris from Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Your screener said that you touched on this last night. I did tune in last night, but I missed that part. I was concerned about Barbaro, the racehorse.
Yes.
And I read in the paper today that he's had some sort of a setback.
He had a setback. We did tried to do a little more of the mass consciousness prayer last night.
Oh, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Because ever since he had that accident, I do my own little prayer meditation every day on various things, and I kept it up, inserting him into my prayers every day, and I was just beginning to feel like, well, maybe I can kind of let that go.
You know, that might have been the mistake that I made.
Yeah.
You know what? We should have continued it. I think it worked the first time. I really think we had a lot to do with it.
That's what I've been feeling, too, and I was sort of hesitant to let it go, and then I started feeling confident, and oh, my God, the next morning I see in the paper that he had a setback. I was just very upset about it.
Yeah, we just stopped.
There are more things in the world to be upset about than that, but still, he touched my heart for some reason.
Well, he's a fighter, isn't he?
Yeah, so maybe, so you did talk about it last night.
Yeah.
To continue.
Yes, I'm very curious to see what happens at this point.
Me too.
All right.
I'm rooting for him.
Thanks.
Thanks, bye.
Appreciate you being part of the program. Let's go to our next wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there. Good evening.
Good evening. Is this from George Norrie?
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Steve Barber. How are you doing?
Good, Steve.
Good. Hey, man, I was just calling to let you know a little prediction. I had something feeling in my heart about a bad weather toward the end of 2007. I mean, and it's like tornadoes in the heartland, like on a...
At the end? That's unusual.
I know. On a Katrina-like scale, our weather's been so bad lately that I feel like time is near. I mean, I just... And if there's anything else I could tell your audience is, you know, if there's somebody you love dearly in your life, the end days are here. So please tell them that you love them and take care of your neighbor.
Well, you know, live every day like it's your last.
Exactly. And, you know, I've talked to you one time before, and you know, you're talking mass conscious, and you've had some great callers tonight. If we could just do a mass consciousness prayer for just each other. As far as America goes, maybe we could put a stop to some of the things that are happening in this country.
Well, I think we need to do more and more of it. You know, we only do it sporadically when there are some events or issues. I guess maybe we should do it on a regular basis. I mean, some people will laugh at us, but who cares? I think it works. I really do. Next wild card line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
All right, I tried to get in last night when they had all of your experts in there about your pyramids, and but I'm security at night, so I was breaking up a fight in the middle of it. But I wanted to ask, and I know you had your experts on, but I just wanted to get your view on it. But I think maybe that they have their timeline a little off. If you look at the evidence concerning the building of the pyramids, it's my theory, it's just mine, but that maybe it was built towards the end of the last ice age.
That's way back there, yeah.
Yeah, that's way back there, because to move the weight and the amount of stone that would have had to have been moved from the northern quarry, it would have been easier to move it over ice.
Now, that's an interesting theory. They kind of just slid it.
Yes, exactly. And it wouldn't take much for them to make wood sleds for the big blocks. I mean, they had trees. And so if they could move them on ice from the northern quarry down south, it would be a much easier travel. Number two, it would take less people to actually move it.
Interesting theories. That's a great thing about you. You have great theories when you call the program. I'll be back in a moment. 3 hours now with Stephen Quayle with a various amount of topics. I mean, they're going to be coming like crazy. Get ready.